Are you saying we're live? We are live. Okay. Welcome, everybody. We are here today at the Moore Bay Community Center. It is Monday, July 7th, 2014 at 5:30 p.m. Today we have a special meeting for conducting interviews for newly formed Water Reclamation Facility Citizens Advisory Committee. We'll call the meeting to order. All members are present. We do have a quorum. We have one member, Council Member Nancy Johnson, unable to attend, but we do have a quorum for today. So I wanted to thank everyone for coming today and applying for this very important advisory committee. We have a great field of applicants, very impressive, and wanted to thank you all. There's a total of 15 applicants. We have 9 today that we'll interview, and then tomorrow we'll conclude the interviews with 6 more tomorrow. The committee will consist of a total of 7 advisory board members. 5 members will be appointed from this pool. There will be 2 applicant or 2 alternates, and then 2 of the 7 will be from one from our Public Works Advisory Board and one from our Planning Commission. The 2 alternates would be expected to attend all the meetings, and with the exception, the alternates would not be able to, and as a result of 2 separate interview sessions today and tomorrow, council will not be casting any votes today. We'll be concluding on the interviews and casting our votes tomorrow. So we'll be conducting the interviews, formulating all our notes, and then we'll carry those notes with us tomorrow. And then following the interviews tomorrow, we'll be casting our votes. We'll select, I think I've gone through this, so we'll select 5 from this pool of applicants, and the 3 for the process of selecting, this will be mostly for tomorrow. So for selecting, we'll from this pool of applicants, we'll select 5. So we'll cast a vote of 5 applicants between during tomorrow. So we'll cast a vote of 5. We'll whittle that down depending on how the majority of that is selected. As an example, if all members of council cast a vote of 5, and then there was 3 out of that selection that the majority of us selected, then we would have to go through another selection process and find 2 more, and so on and so forth, until we get our 5 selected. And then following the 5 that we would select, the first selection, then we would cast a selection for the 2 alternates. And so in the spirit of keeping our meeting consistent, you know, we'll go on with introductions in a minute, but we'll go through introductions for all the applicants. Each council member will have one question to ask with one follow-up question if so needed. And and then we'd also ask during the introduction if all of you would be willing to perform the duties of from council. You know, George, do you have any opening remarks or anything? Christine? No, he didn't have any. You have to hit this button right here.
Oh, there you go. Thanks. Okay, certainly. Thank you. Good evening and welcome. I just wanted to thank each of you for coming out tonight and for applying. I think that what I realized about this process is it's a very public process, from the fact that all of your resumes, the documents you turned in, are online for, you know, the entire community, to the World Wide Web, to view. And then on top of it, you come to this process where you ask questions and you respond, and then you actually get to hear who voted for whom from the council members up here. So it's one of our most awkward processes, I think, but it certainly, you know, we do it all the time, so you get better at it. Some of you have already done it in the past if you've been appointed to boards before, or perhaps you've tried and it hasn't happened for you as well. So it's just one of those ongoing processes that I think is great about representative democracy, and it takes a little bit more time to bring you here and to interview you. But we are streaming live on AGP, and it will be playing over and over a few times, so the community will get a chance to see what it is we've discussed and the things that you've brought to the table. So I just want to thank you. I think it's a very difficult decision. When we created the Citizens Committee, I don't think we thought we would have such a great turnout. Mm-hmm. So thank you all very much. And you know, it would be great to have a committee of 15, but I'm not sure anybody wants to work on a committee of 15. So thank you.
All right. George, you okay? Okay. Noah, you have any comments?
Yeah, just briefly, I wanted to echo my thanks for you all to be here and just stress how much value I think you're going to bring to this process. and the information and recommendations to not only the council, but get
talented, and what a great field to choose from. So with that, if we can start with the process of the interviews, I'll start from the right. If we can just go through, you know, tell us your name and a brief introduction, and then we'll just go from right to left, and we'll start with that.
Okay. We were pressing the wrong button. My name is Valerie Levilette, and I'm a 21-year resident of Morro Bay, environmental planner, cultural resource specialist.
Thank you.
I'm Dennis Holsby. I'm a newcomer to the community. Retired. I'm a biologist by training. I'm primarily medical device and pharmaceuticals.
Thank you.
I'm Bill Woodson. I've been a resident of Morro Bay since 1998. I've been on both the Public Works Advisory Board and Planning Commission. I've been in various other volunteer activities in the city, and I'm looking forward to working on this committee.
My name is John Diodati. I'm a resident of Morro Bay, and I previously was on the Planning Commission as well with Mr. Woodson, and here to interview for this position.
Thank you.
Hi there, I'm Kelsey Schaefer. I've lived in Morro Bay since 2008, grew up in Los Osos. My husband and I have a landscape company here, and I have experience working as a Native American monitor, working with the Los Osos sewer system and being involved in their planning, and working with a couple of other agencies as well.
I'm Dale Guerra. I've lived here my whole life, along with my parents and my grandparents and my great-grandparents. I'm a farmer. I'm also the district manager for the Cayucas Morro Bay Cemetery and secretary of their board up there. I'm on the Cayucas Area Water Organization's Advisory Committee. I farm in Morro Valley up Highway 41.
Great. Thanks, you. Thanks, everybody. We'll get into questions. Thanks for the introductions. And I'll start to my right. No, if you want to lead off with questions, we'll just continue the same order, if you don't mind. Valerie, you know, we'll start with a question, and Noah will ask his question, and then everybody will get to answer that question. Then I'll proceed with my question and then work on down the line. Noah?
Okay. I'd just like to give you a chance to focus in a little more on your skill set and experience and help us understand how you think that skill set would apply to this position.
As part of my work, what we do is we evaluate projects and work in project teams, project development teams, and I work with a variety of technical specialists and come up with solutions to transportation problems or things that need to be addressed. My specialty is cultural resource studies, and I'm an archaeologist by trade. I have advanced degrees in anthropology, archaeology. Have worked in the throughout San Luis Obispo County, throughout the Central Coast. Have a fairly good knowledge of the cultural resources in Morro Creek area, as well as the other areas that we're considering for potential site locations. I feel that my environmental background and working in project development teams, I could bring that to the table. It's my strength.
As I said, I'm a biologist, and primarily the skill set I bring to the table is that I have been a delegate to AAMI and ANSI, which are two groups that are standard-setting committees that feed into the ISO standards. ASTM is an engineering group. However, they have a microbiology and biocompatibility sections that I was involved in. And AAMI is American Association for Medical Instrumentation. They were involved in sterilization sciences, as well as my type of work that I did the last 10 years of my career, you know, as well as the work I did for the company itself in that field.
Hi. My background's engineering. I am a registered professional engineer, and I went from design through maintenance through construction and commissioning of various facilities, including power plants. In that career, I had to deal with everything from conception to environmental studies to permits to especially the financing. And I'm pretty familiar with the financing and projects and the scheduling. And I think that that's a very important element. And I might add that those two projects that I was involved in came in under budget and on schedule. So I think that that's pretty rare. And I'm very proud of that fact. Recently, after the Planning Commission, I did spend a year. I just finished with the grand jury, and I think that that's another thing that is very important as well. Not what we did, but what we dealt with. There's 19 of us, 19 of us around a table, and it was a process of dealing with people, mediating with people, trying to get agreement on issues, and I think that it was a very helpful experience.
I'm on the project team for the Los Osos Wastewater Project. I've been there since its inception in 2007. I've been to every Coastal Commission meeting. I worked very hard with the team to obtain a unanimous approval for that coastal development permit. My work in the county takes me down to Oceano, where we work in flood management and have to work with the Coastal Commission on permitting in the coastal zone down there. As far as financing is concerned, I was the lead on project financing for the Los Osos Wastewater Project. One of my tasks was to go back to Washington, D.C. every year and work with our congressional delegation. ARA money, the stimulus money, was working through Congress, identified that Los Osos could be eligible for USDA funding, but it wasn't eligible. So it took a bipartisan effort to get Congress to put special legislation in that made Los Osos eligible for USDA funding. And they received about $83 million in funding for that project, low-interest loans and grant funds. And we're almost at $100 million in USDA funding now that I've been with the county for projects throughout the entire county, water and wastewater. The other skill set I bring is I was chair of the Planning Commission when this project came forward a couple years ago, and that obviously took a lot of research and time in getting to know the project and understanding the background, where it came from, what its objectives were. So I feel I already have a head start in project knowledge and take that and move forward with this project.
Hi there. I have experience just mainly with the Los Osos sewer system and working with culturally sensitive material and resources. And just I have experience working with Applied Earthworks, who's provided you with the reports that you have so far, along with a couple of other archaeological firms. I've also studied some anthropology, archaeology, and osteology in school, along with a little bit of law, and working to go to school for water engineering and public works areas. So I think this would be a great learning experience for me, but as well I'd be able to bring some of my native heritage information and background, and I think that would be an asset that you can't find easily elsewhere. Thank you.
My background is in computer technology and IT service agreements. I am still working full-time for a large company that provides data processing and IT for some of the largest users in the world, companies. And I'm currently serving as an advisor for IT service agreements. I negotiate large global enterprise agreements. I have to do a lot of web conferencing and teleconferencing with people in other countries, primarily Europe, Australia, and India, to bring about an agreement that combines hardware, software, professional services, and also implements contracts effectively without entering into any kind of dispute resolution. My background includes a master's degree in business with a minor in finance, and in that capacity, I've been serving my second term on the Measure Q Finance Committee.
Why, and I will learn what is necessary so I can challenge those conclusions. And I assume that will create a better solution for our water problem.
Well, my background, I too am Navy trained, not college trained. I've worked in a really stuck and I think we did a really, really good job in researching. I've made a lot of friends at the state board. I know people at the regional board, water boards. I too have a talent of understanding technical documents. I don't know why, but I've read enormous amounts just on the power plant in the last 14 years, made many presentations before the Coastal Commission, state board, regional boards. I worked on creating the new water regulations for once through chlorine that I'm really proud of. I attended all the workshops with the state board on that. And I think that I bring to this, I'm a citizen, I love our town. First time I saw Morro Bay in 1974, I knew it was the place for me. I moved here in 79. And I just believe we live in the best place in the country, and I believe that we need water security and the best plant for long range for Morro Bay. And I too am a critical thinker, and I don't take people's words for things. I don't mind putting the time in to read documents and figure things out, and that's my strengths. Thanks.
That better? Okay. My main reason is I wanted to be on here for a voice from the farmers in the area to be on the board to get an idea of what's going on. I have a background in budgets. I do budgets. My proudest is the Friends of the NRA. I've made them over the past 2 years of probably about $120,000 doing fundraising for them. And I deal with the Brown Act a lot. I have to do that with where I work. So hopefully, because of the farming and where the water could go. I would like to know more about it and like to help out if I can, because I know what crops take and I know what farmers use. So, and I know data about how to do that. And if I don't, I will find out. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. Val, we'll start back with you. So when considering your application for this committee, could you describe your motivation and interest and doing that research, what you felt was the one of the most important things in siting a new wastewater or a water reclamation facility? So basically, when you're considering the applying for this committee, you know, what was your motivation and interest for the committee, and what do you feel the most important piece of siting a new water reclamation facility would be?
Well, I think, like everyone here, we want to help. We want to participate. We want to participate. We all have expertise, areas of knowledge that we can share, and maybe that would be of aid to the community and regeneration. And it's critical that we are moving forward with reclamation, and it has now become a very important component of our treatment plant. And I would like to be part of that. And I think that's basically my main motivation.
Thank you, Val.
Well, I said I'm a newcomer to the community, and I've been interested in moving down here ever since I was a little kid. We used to come over here from the Central Valley. I retired, and then when my wife retired, my daughter moved out to the to get for her job. We got to come down here, and I wanted to get involved in the community. So I've been to the Cultural History Museum, several different hikes, and then when this committee became, I saw this in the paper, I applied. Before I even came down here, I wrote to the Tribune concerning the placement of the sewage treatment plant. So this was just a good opportunity for me to get involved with the people that are making the decisions. For water remediation, sewer treatment, other types of things of interest in this community, development of the Embarcadero. And so that's why I applied. I'd like to be part of that process. I've got the time. I've got the interest.
Great. Thank you.
I just finished a very time-consuming volunteer job with the grand jury. And before that, I was pretty much continually involved in the community, and sewer is going to be a very, very difficult thing to wrestle with. There's many issues that we have to think about very, very long and hard, and garner as much facts as we can, and I'm looking forward to that challenge. As far as siting's concerned, I think probably the first thing I would be most interested in is who's going to participate in this sewer. Is Cayucas going to be a partner or not? That would have an effect on the site. Are we going to go to CMC or not? That's going to have an effect on where you site. Who do you want involved? Do you want the county involved? Do you want Cayucas involved? Who are the players? And what kind of authority and responsibility are you going to give these players? The second thing on siting that I think is very, very important is what is the land use that surround the sites that we're looking at? And what is the zoning? And what are the receptions that you're getting from the residents and the people that live in the very close vicinities? Are they supportive, or are they, I know that we all observed what happened in Los Osos, and we don't want that to happen in Morro Bay. And so we have to work this through very, very carefully on how we're going to go about it. And that's enough for me right now.
My primary motivation is because I'm a ratepayer in Morro Bay, because this is laying the foundation for those future rates. You can sit here and ignore the community and put a project forward that probably won't get a permit, and you're back to square one again, or work through the community process and get yourself a project that's going to get a permit and going to be functional for the entire community, and that's very important. So that's why I want to be a part of this. As far as siting's concerned, I'm very pro-business, pro-community, pro-outdoor recreation, and economic development. And this project intertwines all of those. And it's fascinating from that standpoint, because you have a facility that is past its useful life, definitely from a siting standpoint and from a technology standpoint. And we've been told by the permitting agencies that it can't go there anymore. And so now we're going to... This isn't just a wastewater project. This is an economic development project. This is going to help the businesses in Morro Bay by freeing up coastal property, which is an asset to everybody. It's going to offer more outdoor recreation, which is what tourists are seeking out now and coming with more money to spend in our community. And it's also a water resource if we choose to go that route. It doesn't necessarily have to be, but there's a potential water resource with that water, the million plus gallons a day that are treated. And you're seeing it up and down the coast throughout California, with or without the drought, that water being reused for beneficial reuse. And it's just an exciting project to be part of.
My motivation is the fact that I've been here for generations, and my family will continue to be here for generations. And this is one of my main concerns, are water resources. And the potential for water rights through this project are huge in many ways and small in some. That's something that I have a big concern in, and I think all of us here do. And it's something I would definitely like to be a part of. Along with the cultural resources, my family is Chumash from this area, so that's always an issue, not an issue, but it's always a concern anytime there's a project. But for me personally, I'm coming here as a resident, a longtime resident, and I'm looking at my children and in their future and their children. What kind of treatment center are we going to have for them? Is it going to be sustainable for our whole entire community and even the surrounding communities? And that's why I'm here. Thank you.
My motivation is similar. I currently serve on one of the committees, and I've received a lot of benefit from that in helping and applying expertise. I also serve a lot in the technical community on some advisory panels, and also in speaking at conferences. And I actually really believe that if we share information with other people in our field and with our suppliers, our constituents, we all benefit. And I believe, as all the other speakers, applicants have said, we have a very complex project in front of us. And it will take a lot of collaboration for all of us to come up with the best long-term solution. As far as siting, I've read some of the preliminary reports. I would have a lot of questions and would want to delve into some of that in more detail. So these are the things I think we need to evaluate very carefully and take all points of view into consideration.
My motivation, well, I applied to keep the option open. I retired at age 56. It took a lot out of me in those last few months to get to retirement. I thought it would take 3 or 4 months to recover, and then I would pursue using my talents in some way. It's been 3 or 4 years, and I'm still trying to recover, and I'm really enjoying my retirement. So I'm not real gung-ho to give all of that up. But I applied because I don't really know what you need here, and so I'm saying, and the opportunity is now. It's not going to be down the road. So I'm offering my services and let you decide whether you can use my talents or not. Now, as far as citing, I think you said the most important. I think that in 30 years, we're going to forget about how much we paid for this thing. And we're only going to be thinking about how much we're paying for it each month at that time. And therefore, operating costs, I think, are a concern. And making sure that
meetings and, you know, felt like I was outside the system and trying to present to people that had other agendas, and I felt outside. So when this came up, I know that I can work within a group to bring consensus to the best project available along with the information that backs that up. And I believe in working as a group. I believe that, you know, dealing with people with respect and listening to everybody's opinions is super important, and I can do that very well. And, you know, as far as, you know, where it's going to be and what it's going to be is really a question to be answered. And I think I'm a person that can analyze what's in front of us, and the cost is very important down the road. And it's something that is one of the biggest things that's going to happen in Morro Bay in my lifetime. And I want to see it be the best that it can be right from the beginning. And I'm not a person that's afraid of these big dollar figures that are thrown around. If we do it right, as David said, the cost isn't going to matter in 30 years. It's going to be the water that we're going to be getting out of this. Because if anybody doubts that we have a water problem now and in the past, and not the distant past, you know, we were almost mocked when we asked for water that we could have reclamated out of this plant. And now it's the reality is setting in. We're not going to have a pipeline. We're going to need this water. It might not just be for irrigation on farms. It's to, you know, hold back the seawater from our already endangered wells, which that's out there. And it will take research. You know, it's easy to get consultants to come in and sell us their plants, but there are things going on in the world that, you know, we don't even know about. And with a group like this, you can weed out all kinds of information. And if everybody's listening to everybody and treating people with respect, the truth will come right up to the top, and it's easy to see. And that's my talent and motivation.
Well, my motivation was I wanted to be the voice of local ag, to get somebody that knows everybody and that can help, you know, buffer a zone or talk to people and to see if it's viable for agriculture to use or if it's more viable for to recharge the water basin for the city of Morro Bay. You know, I want whatever's best for the community, whatever cost is best for the community, whatever siting is best for the community. It doesn't matter if it goes out into our area, whatever's best for the community of Morro Bay and outlying areas and for the water from Morro Bay. Cost is a big thing. You know, we got to try to keep the cost down as best we can. It's a matter of whatever is going to be, you know, what the site is going to be for that. And I wanted to be a part of it, and to see if I could get my voice heard and agriculture's voice heard on and the committee. So that's what my motivation was when I saw it in the paper. Also, I would like to say I would not want to be an alternate. I don't know if I could just handle sitting there on my hands and not being able to say.
Ever faced. Now, one thing that you hear from the public out there is cost. What is this going to cost us? And it looks like there's figures are running around out there. Or some of them are pretty astronomical. But being not talking about being on city council here, but I'm, as a businessman, I'm also personally worried about cost because this is it. And I want to know exactly, when you start choosing a site, how much weight are you going to put into this cost to the place? Are you going to take a look at it and say, this is going to raise the citizens of Morro Bay 2, 3, 4 times higher rate? we're going to get a lot of kickback on this. So you're going to have to take this into consideration, and this is going to be one of the main things. Sure, the location site is very important too, but cost is another one. So how much do you weigh on cost in this project?
Valerie?
Cost is very important, and I think that given the fact that we no longer have the existing facility as an option, which would be our least cost alternative, we need to look at the other alternatives, second, third alternatives, and down the line in terms of what's available to us. There's one that is being considered, not in the May 2014 report, but is a subject of further evaluation. Looking at phasing of the water reclamation facility, and over through time, we will be making developments and amendments to it to just get through the first phase, get it built, and then build in our more costly. Some of the more costly aspects of reclaiming some of the water. And so I feel comfortable that by phasing and over time, we'll be able to come up with a solution. But cost is very important, and I think we have to look at what is available to us. Like I said, what's our next best choice? What's our next best location? And phasing in technologies. And I think that's going to, I want to say flesh out, but flesh out as we go along.
Well, budgeting is not one of my strong points, I can tell you that right now. I've always had to work within a budget, usually driven by the accountants. You have so much money for each project, and you're delegated so much. And you try to work as best you can within that budget to get the job done. Nonetheless, the priority is to get these products in the market, and that usually overruns some of the cost considerations or budgetary considerations that are set forth at the beginning. For this particular project, I believe we can work within a budget, depending on how sophisticated you want this treatment to be. You could begin by varying, if you will. But I believe you have to start somewhere, and when the budget's in place, you work within that to get a system started, and then expand as you can.
Thank you, Bill.
Well, I think cost is the overriding factor of where we're going to go. I hope that the city administrators are now looking already for grants and low-interest loans, for starters, for keeping the cost of financing as low as we possibly can for these projects. And I know that you've got consultants already looking at rates for water and for infrastructure for the sewer, and now you're going to add on this project, which is going to be a big hit. I think you can look at the project in stages. You want to look at it very closely as to whether you can meet the requirements of the various agencies that are going to be coming down on you, and have an initial facility with the ability to build out maybe more sophisticated refinement as you go along. I think that we have to look very, very closely at the costs and the costs of the residents and the businesses of our city, and that's going to be a paramount issue of what we're going to try to do. A typical sewer, there's reclamation opportunities there. Maybe there's a moneymaker at that end. Maybe it'll pay for itself. These are very interesting questions to me. I don't know the answer. But I think that with access to the experts, I have a tendency to go with proven technology rather than trying something untried. I think that the technology is there for us. I think that if we're careful in our siting where it is and the staging that we do and the financing that we do, that we can try to make this manageable for the people of the city, and that would be my goal.
The specific question, I believe, was the weight to what we would put for cost, and my answer to that is high, incredibly high. I said earlier that I'm a rate payer, and that's one of the primary drivers for me being here, but what I would rate higher than cost is the permeability of the project. I think we saw with the last project, the last iteration, cost was ranked higher than being able to obtain a permit, and it all fell apart. And we spent a lot of money, increased our bills, and didn't have a project. So getting a permit is the most important factor. The work effort, we're advisory to you, us advising to your council, the best project to obtain a permit is going to help drive down the cost the most because that provides certainty. And now the council, staff, the community knows where the plant's going to be sited. They know the technology. They'll be able to get bids and have a price certain. No speculation. This project is going to get permitted. It's going to get built. And then financing comes in. The climate adaptation, whether you believe about it or not, the federal government does, the state government does. They're allocating money towards those infrastructure projects that commit to that type of plan, and this project is going to be a managed retreat project. This project's going to have reclamation most likely, and in this drought, you're seeing money allocated towards projects that mitigate against drought and bolster a community's water resources. So from our standpoint as an advisory committee, the best thing we can do for cost is help you get towards having a permit, understanding what this project's going to entail, and then work towards the best financing for that project.
Everyone's first question is how much is it going to cost them? So of course cost is going to be really high, I believe, on all of our agendas. As far as I'm concerned, I know the initial cost, you know, no one's going to be happy with, you know, the initial cost. No one is ever happy looking at large numbers. But I also agree that looking in the future, what are those rates going to be? I think that that is really important to consider what they could be, and also doing cost analysis of if we can reclaim water and use some sort of gray water system, you know, and stream augmentation, what are those benefits also that counter those would-be costs if we don't have a wastewater facility? Water is, you know, it's getting more and more expensive everywhere that you look, and in the future, it's only going to get more expensive. So if we can find a way to, you know, counter that and prepare for that through this system, I think that's really going to benefit the community in the future. Thank you.
We don't understand what you have. In other words, the capitalization is one major. That's the upfront cost and how that's going to be borrowed or debt serviced, finance, tax considerations, grant funding, etc. And then secondarily would be the operating expenses, and you have to extrapolate those over a period of time. I think it will require very thorough financial analysis to really understand the components of that cost so that you do make the most effective long-term decision. Thank you.
Thank you.
Cost. As an accountant, I like talking about cost. I think I agreed with what everybody said. You know, the potential for selling the water and using that as a source of revenue. The difference between the cost to build the facility compared to the cost to operate the facility. Now, George, you mentioned rates going up 2, 3, 4, 5 times. In Cayucas, I pay the Cayucas Sanitary District $52. Is that what you pay? Okay. All right. Well, and that's about what Morro Bay pays? All right. Well, you know, so I was thinking, what's this going to cost me, you know, the ratepayer point of view? Well, if it goes up 50%, that's $25 a month. That's nothing. If we're talking going up $1,000 a month, all right, wait a minute, I want to talk about it now. So the payment. What it takes to build, I assume we're going to have some debt, bonds, 30-year bonds, turn that into a monthly amount. But the entire amount, do we have to finance by the ratepayers? Maybe not. How much of it can we get through grants and other government agencies to pay for it? We don't know that. So in terms of the cost of acquisition, since we don't know how much we can get other people to pay for us, the cost of acquisition is not as big in my mind as if we have plant A that's going to make our bill go up $25 a month and plant B that's going to make it go up $1,000. Now that's important. I think that's all I wanted to say.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'd agree with everybody that cost is very high. And I also believe that it can be managed, and with a committee such as this, that would be their main job, is to look at the best plant and not use just, you know, tactics of, you know, estimating how much something's going to go up before you even know what you're going to build. And that's one of the things, you know, you can't project. It's going to be an expensive project, but when you consider the use that our wastewater plant receives, and, you know, $50 or $75 increase seems to be a lot, but down the road, is it going to be? And I believe that we have to take into consideration the cost of long-term running. If this plant costs different components, get it up to tertiary, because there's all kinds of things coming down the pike in technology. I mean, nanotechnology, by the time this is built, they'll have some sort of digester using nanos that may reduce the cost of purifying the water so that we can drink it. These are other things we have to work into the whole system, because I hope that we don't buy an old-fashioned system and pay a lot of money for it just because it works. When, you know, you can pay a lot of money for a up-to-date technical system that works. Like, we don't have any alternative energy on this. We could get lots of tax credits. We could probably get grants from the CEC to put solar panels outside of our sewer plant, because cost of electricity is very high on these plants. So that's going to bring a huge return. And that kind of thinking needs to go into this whole thing. And that's cost that you will recover. And it's not good to talk about the potential of, you know, 5 times increased bills if you don't know that. I think until you have a plan, and I can say, George, look, this is going to cost a lot, but this is what it does over the amount of years, and you have a real formula that really comes down to a true cost as opposed to something that's driving one project or another, which we've seen in the past. So cost is super high. It's number one, and I think we should get the most for our money, and that's what I believe.
Well, I think cost is number one on everybody, but also cost versus environmental impacts are going to be the cost. And who knows what you can sell it for, if you can sell it or can use it in the city if it comes out that clean. And the more you clean it, the more it costs. You know, for secondary or tertiary, I mean, you get to tertiary where it comes out drinking water, it's going to cost a lot of money. But if you can get it to where it goes out and goes into a recharge basin, like perk ponds, or, you know, I don't think you can have it. Fish and Game wouldn't let you, Fish and Wildlife wouldn't let you pour it into a creek anymore, but you could put it into ponds so it could perk down into the water, and once it perks through all the layers, then it goes into a recharge basin and you can use it. So, you know, less as far as cost and where it's located is not always best either. I mean, what's going to be best for the whole community? So, and that Fort May report has some inaccuracies in it as far as landowner, APN numbers, and who owns property where. So they didn't get all that right. So I don't know if you guys knew that already or not. So you're talking 1 million gallons per per day is what it's going to put out. So that's roughly 3 acre feet of water. And my ranch uses 1 acre foot per day. Now my neighbors use plenty more than that. So.
All right. Thanks, Dale.
I told you I worked in Memphis.
Sure.
In Memphis, the sewer bill was proportional to the water bill. If you use more water, you paid more for sewer. I don't know if you do that here or not, but it made sense.
Okay. When the council discussed this project, having a committee like this, there were 5 key areas that we listed and we put in the ad. And just to refresh, because I refreshed myself on this, so I would be able to make a difficult decision, perhaps slightly less difficult. So in the ad, we wrote that folks who apply should have an interest in or knowledge of engineering, water quality, planning, environmental permitting, and municipal finance matters. But I think we forgot a key one, and that's what I'm going to ask my question about, and that is communication. So what I've learned, if I've learned anything as a council member, it's once you identify yourself in the public as someone who has particular knowledge that other community members want to know about, you will be waylaid at the grocery store everywhere you go. So give yourselves 5 or 10 minutes extra, or find out a way to, you know, say, oh, I got to go. So in considering that your role will be fairly prominent on this committee, can you think of a time, well, tell us an experience then when you had to take a multifaceted, complex project and explain it to people in simple terms. So I think that's what you'll be spending a lot of time on outside of your meeting role, and you will ultimately advise the city council, but there will be a lot of questions that you will be managing in the community on behalf of the council. So if you can give us an example of from your past experience where you worked on a complex project, and how did you explain that to folks in simple terms?
My area of knowledge and working with engineers that they have so that they develop an understanding of what it is that I'm concerned about and what are the issues associated with that, and getting it to a point where they embrace that and project design and the way they think about a project incorporates those issues and concerns. I think that's, in general, that's what I've done most of my career. So I've been at a meeting where our district director, it was funny, there was an instance where our district director explained to the rest of the project team why we wanted to avoid something. He explained the archaeological issues at a particular area, and that's because we've worked together for 20 years, so he was trained well. So I guess that's part of communication. But I also think that sometimes if you're working on a team, they don't necessarily want to do something. You have a project manager or a project sponsor who would rather approach a particular construction project in a certain way. And I just have this project in Santa Barbara County that keeps coming to mind, where we have a roadway, Highway 192, and it's full of all this rock work. Old bridges and rock culverts and this and that and the next thing. And the project sponsor was okay with, after a certain period of time, or if there's continuity in the design, et cetera, just because it's old and it's rock, what have you. And so it took a lot of convincing, but I was able to show that it's to the department's benefit to take on the larger study and evaluate all the properties along this one stretch of highway. Luckily, it wasn't a very long road. And in terms of the long run, in terms of how they would be able to approach roadway improvements. And it turned out that even though this isn't a historic, there were historic elements out there, it was not historically significant. And so that when they go, so that that sort of eliminated in the long run having to go then if they have a project improvement at a particular culvert, individually evaluating that property. So that whole, that's an example of just being able to communicate and explain and come up with reasons why you might want to try a different kind of approach. That's not to say that, if, in contrast, we have Highway 1 where we have a historic district up there. And conversely, we did a, you know, complete an evaluation and inventory. And that's a very different situation. So we have to treat things a little bit differently. But anyway, I think that if you have your information and if you have your, and you can explain why it's to the benefit of the agency or the group that you
had combination devices, which were coronary stents that were drug coated. So we had to work with the Division of Drugs and the Division of Medical Devices. Both had their own sets of regulations and their own reviewers. But we also had to work with the international community, which is the ISO standards. So in order to comply with all these different agencies, we would have to devise a program of biocompatibility such that when we finished the program, it met the requirements for the EC, the U.S., China, Japan, and other countries that might have other nuances that had to be met. And all of these were incorporated into ISO, but usually it was up to the individual country to determine which of those they were going to apply. And if you could apply these across the board, it'd make it easier. But one country would want one specific test as opposed to this country to want another specific test, both within the same category of, say, hemocompatibility. This is getting far afield from water remediation, but you asked for a complex issue. And I'm trying to explain all of this to a group of engineers who are designing these medical devices. And they have to understand what types of constraints we're under from a regulatory standpoint in order to get this product approved. So oftentimes I would be asked to present to certain project groups as to what they had to do to meet these requirements. Because my testing came at the end of the line, and I became the rate limiting step, because the design of the device had to be, and getting everybody on the same page so we could do this as quickly as possible. I hope that answered your question.
Thanks, Dennis.
From a different perspective altogether.
Communications, huh? I like to think that I'm a good listener, and I think that to communicate with others, I think that you have to be able to pay attention to what they're saying, what their body language is, and be able to be patient with them, and ask them to clarify some of the things that may not be clear to you. So I think listening is number one. The instance that I can recall that I had in trying to communicate with people is when we went into a small town called Delta, Utah, to build a power plant. And it was a coal-based power plant, and it was a community of farmers, ag people, that were suspicious of L.A. people coming in to invade them and to take advantage of them. And we thought a long time how we could convince these people that a power plant in their community would be a good idea, taking their water, for instance, and taking their land and bringing in temporary workers and so forth. And so we thought of many ways to do that, including improving their infrastructure and so forth and so on. But the main thing was to communicate with these people. But in communicating with these people, we thought it was very important to get them relaxed, listen to them, maybe even tell them a joke so as you get a little camaraderie going, and then convince them that these are the benefits that you're going to get out of this project. It's going to cost you this much, but you're going to get this back, and this is your reward. We use simple, straightforward language. We use USA Today short sentences and vocabulary. And then we told them what we were going to tell them. We told them, and then we told them what we told them. And by doing that, I think that it was a success, and we ended up building the plant. And I think that we still have good relations with that town of Delta.
So I'm a little embarrassed to admit this, but the most challenging communication task I've ever had was probably the Los Osos Wastewater Project, which is boring to most people, but I guess incredibly appropriate for this interview. And I'm going to talk about it because it obviously I'm trying to sell myself for being on this committee. There's three components of that project that were very difficult to communicate to the different stakeholders that were involved. The first was cost. That project, when you talk about cost, that project had a $25,000 assessment, had my personal work phone number put on every single ballot. So you talk about communicating. Yeah, I'm still here to talk about it and still talking to some people about it in Los Osos. But for one, I feel we're a large department, 200 employees where I work, and I was the one that was chosen to have that. So I'm either an amazing sucker or I can communicate. It's one of the two. I'll choose the latter, right? I know I'm a sucker, so given there. But I had to talk to people who were from all ends of the spectrum. There are folks who... They're going to write a check the next day. And they were so happy to see this happen. And there were folks who said they were going to have to eat dog food if this went through. And I had to communicate with them why, how, and where this project is going and explain to them the best I could, because some people just, you're never going to get there with them, why this project was happening and what it meant and where we were going with it. Then on permitting, one of the requirements of the project was to recycle the water and reuse it 100%, no ocean outfall. And that meant we're going to have to provide, well, the permit said we're going to have to provide 10% of the water to farmers. And so, again, I was chosen to be the one who had to reach out to the farmers and write the contracts with them on reusing that water for their crops. And as we've heard earlier from one of the interviewees here, is that, you know, farmers care about their lifestyle, their product, their land, and what they're doing with that. And they had a very high interest on what this meant to them and their lifestyle and the history of using recycled water. So we communicated, because I'm not a farmer, I have a degree from Cal Poly in crop science, and lectured in the ag business department, so I know, and worked for the USDA, so I know farming pretty well, but I don't farm. So I can't communicate with a farmer like a farmer can communicate with a farmer. So we brought farmers to the farmers and had them communicate with each other, so the trials and tribulations of using recycled water. And I think that really helped because they were now communicating with their peer group, and we were just simply the intermediary. Although at the end of the day, we are going to be part of this relationship with them, so that instilled the trust with them. And then the third one on the project was financing, because the project's $183 million project. That's a high-dollar project. And to really bring down project costs, we have about $20 million in grants, but to bring down project costs is the financing. We got extended term loan financing, so we're looking at some of half the projects being financed with 40-year financing. That brings down the cost. You pay more in interest over time, but that interest is spread out over 40 years of users, because we're not going to be the only ones using this plant. It's going to be used for generations, so generations should share in the cost of this plant as it moves forward. And then the interest rate, and we were able to bring down actually the interest rate to 2%, and that's an incredible below market interest rate. And that required communicating with broad ends of the spectrum. I sat in the House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy's office, and he had just taken a no earmark pledge and had to convey to him, you have to be transparent, you have to be completely honest with them and listen to them, because they do have a valid point of view and perspective where they're coming from. And even though it's one project, and at the end of the day, it's just you're flushing your toilet, so you don't think much about it, but everyone is going to have a very strong opinion about this project, whether it be all the water needs to go to the farmers, none of it goes to the farmers, the project should have been built where it was before, don't like the Coastal Commission. We're going to hear everything, and those are all valid opinions, and you can't be argumentative. You have to understand where they're coming from and then seek common ground with them and build that relationship, because we're all community and we're all going to live with this project for the next 50 years plus.
Thanks, John.
Well, I've always said that I think communication is number one in any relationship, whether it's personal, business, or political relationship, that can make or break it. As far as an experience with myself, several years ago, I was a manager of a company that created databases and also created e-commerce websites for companies. And I was the middleman between the designer and the customer that wanted this database or this e-commerce store created. And their lingos, their language are completely different. The designers, they are all technical. They are using words that when I try, in the beginning, I would try to use those words with the customer to explain things. It did not work well. You know, I learned that you needed to speak to people on a very basic level. You needed to speak to them English in words that they're all going to understand and not, you know, try and sound, you know, macho or anything with what I'm trying to say. And anxiety, how to handle that is really important. Keeping calm, always listening to what they have to say and respond in a respectful way. I've learned sometimes less is more in certain situations, you know. And I think that I've always prided myself with my communication and being open to people and being open to ideas, and also being able to bring it back to another group and explain those concerns and be a voice for those people. Yeah, I think that I would be good at that. Thanks.
Barbara, thanks.
I also like to talk, and I believe that the communication is very important with this project and with many projects sometimes overlooked. In my career, IT service, I have to take some very complicated subjects and whittle them down to, and in fact present sometimes to audiences of strangers as to why this is important, what you need to get out of this, deliver the message, summarize the message, and what you can do to protect your company. And therefore, that is extremely important. The other thing I've learned is, as a closer example, maybe on the Measure Q, where we used to give multi-page, single-space summaries once a year in our presentation, that the last 2 years we have changed to 2 pages, 6 bullets, PowerPoint, and that may sound trivial, but if you really want to get people's attention and get their support, then you need to obtain their buy-in. And you do that by listening, summarizing, and then presenting and answering questions. So I'd be willing to help the committee in any way we could in terms of doing it.
I had much greater success by asking them leading questions and let them think through the problem rather than me telling them the answer. They arrive at the answer. The example I have of complex topic. In the Navy, I got assigned to the Nuclear Propulsion Training Unit in upstate New York. I got assigned to the S6G propulsion plant under construction. We use those propulsion plants after they've been tested to train students, but we had no training materials for the students. So I prepared, you know, not the entire propulsion plant. Specific systems were assigned to me, and I prepared the materials. And I also would like to mention that the first class I taught was to the original manning crew of the USS Ohio. Every one of my students outranked me. Every one of my students had more time at sea than I had in the Navy. But I had prepared the training materials.
Yeah, you know, communications, it takes respect. I mean, you have basic respect for people, and you answer their questions as honestly as you can. And it's as simple as that. I mean, if ideas into this so that the best ideas float, the rest go down. And as simple as that, and I'm not attached to my ideas. I get my ideas from data. I'm a data specialist. I can read reports that I know nothing about and come out the other end knowing something about it. And that's how I can describe what I do. And I've done that with the power plant issue in town. And again, everybody doesn't agree on it, but, you know, the facts are the facts, as they said. And here we sit, and that was a complex problem that I knew nothing about in the beginning. I knew a lot about it at the end, and I was able to communicate it to a lot of different people, I believe. And it was through honesty and through what I believed to be the truth and had the data to back it up. And I think that's what this committee has to do, is get the truth and present it to the people, because they don't want to hear just numbers and random ideas. They want to know, you know, what kind of plan are we going to get? And what is the cost? I mean, to just throw out numbers just doesn't get it, because long-term cost is irrelevant. I mean, you have to build this, and it's going to cost so much, and there's probably three different scenarios that you can run and go up 10 or 15 or 20% on each scenario as you go forward. But maybe the cheapest scenario is the best scenario. But without taking it apart and talking about it and discussing it, you don't know. So it's taking all the ideas and digesting them down and come out the other end with the best idea. And like I say, cost is one of those things that is really hard to explain. I mean, initially I just paid $20,000 for a little compact car. My first house cost almost the same price. So, you know, in my lifetime, it doesn't take long to run up numbers. So the initial sticker shock, we're going to have 30% of the people in town, no matter what we bring forward, they're not going to like it. But, you know, if it's a real project and something that all of us are going to agree is going to be a good project, we have to go forward. We have no choice. And to throw up numbers just to inflate people who want to argue, those people are out there and they're ready to argue no matter what you give them. So let's just go forward and respect the information and the knowledge that comes from a committee like this and what you already know, put it together, and we're going to have a great project. And we need this. Sooner we build it, the better it is. And, you know, interest rates are never going to be lower than they are now, so that's going to save us a lot of money over 40 years. So I think the sooner we can come to consensus and move ahead, because we're not inventing a wheel here. All we're going to do is build the best plant that's available. And with knowledge from everybody, you're going to come up with the best plant. Simple as that. Thank you.
Thanks, David. You're doing a great job, Bob. Thanks.
Communication. I've been working, I worked 6 years for a private, being a manager of a feed store dealing with the public. I've now worked 25 years dealing with the public in the public sector, working for the government. And what I've found is you got to listen. You listen. If you don't know the answer to something they're asking, don't answer it. Just tell them you'll find out. You don't want to give false information. And that's the main thing. You listen, you smooth them over, and you make them think it's their idea. Basically, dealing with a complex issue, I have one. When they were doing the remediation of the Morro Bay burn dump, Morro Bay used to take all their garbage out Highway 41, dump it in piles, and light it on fire. And so there's all these articles in the paper about this burn dump, and it happened to be right next door to our place. So I would get stopped all the time, and there were all these complex things they would tell you what they're going to do. What I would tell people, basically, this is what they're doing. They're covering up the ashes. They're building rock weirs so it doesn't fall into the creek. That's why they're spending all this money, so the water doesn't get polluted with ash. That's it.
All right, Dale, thanks. Well, that concludes our first round of questions. Thanks very much. Really, what it comes down to now is whether or not we have any follow-up questions. I think everybody did great. It was quite extensive. I'll get to that, yeah. So I know we have, we're getting reminded that I think Barbara said you would be willing to do an alternate, but what we really need to know is who's not willing to do, to be an alternate. So we have, okay, so we have three here. So David, Dale, and Dennis, or excuse me, David, got it. You don't want to be the alternates. Okay, that's great to know. And with that, are there any follow-up questions? No, do you have a follow-up question? Any George? Yeah, no kidding. Christine?
It's incredible. Thank you so much. I just wondered if we wanted to give anyone on the panel an opportunity to maybe address something briefly that they didn't get to cover. I wouldn't mind hearing more about their experience.
Okay.
If you're amenable to that.
And that would be your follow-up question. I think that'd be great if there's anyone on the panel that would be interested in following up on something. And I'll just, anything for you? David? Barbara? Kelsey?
I would like to just add to Christine's question about the communication. One thing that I would like to say as far as currently now, for our tribe, my tribe, Chumash tribe, I'm a co-chair of language, and so I attend a lot of conferences on going through archives and doing research on language and finding what works for it and finding the history behind it. And then I come back home, and my co-chair and I, we get together and we write curriculum to teach the language here locally within our families and our tribe, but also working with the San Luis, the adult education school out there by Cuesta. And I've done a couple of speeches and a couple of workshops at Cal Poly as well, and also at the Del Mar Elementary School. And I would just like to say, with that range of learning information and then regenerating it for other people to learn as well, I think that's really beneficial for the communication, and that would apply here as well for taking the information, whichever way it's coming from the council or from the community, and bringing it forth.
Great, Kelsey. Anybody else follow up?
Thank you for your time.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
I kind of expected to hear some information about the use of gray water, just untreated gray water, and a distribution system for the untreated gray water as part of this water remediation advisory group. Is that not included in this task force?
That's a good question, but when I think of gray water, I think of gray water that's produced from our home for, washing machine and things like that. But all the technical data for something like that will be brought up from our, our staff. I don't know if Rob, you want to comment on that or not?
Probably not.
You want to take the mic?
Sure.
Maybe you should introduce yourself so they know who you are and that you might have to work with you.
I'm Rob Leivick, Public Services Director for the City Engineer and Project Manager so far on this project. Gray water systems, the way I view gray water systems is it's just what Mayor Irons said. It's the washing machine water. What we'll be looking at as far as perhaps a distribution system is for the reclaimed water. How to, after it's been treated, how to get that to the various users and at what level of treatment those users will need the water.
Okay, great. You have a question, Noah?
Yeah, actually, Mr. Leivick, while you're here and standing up there, Christine had mentioned what we had included as far as the role and scope of the committee in our advertisements, but if you wouldn't mind, I think it'd be good for the public and the committee applicants to just briefly review what you see as the first steps that the committee would be involved with.
Well, when we talked about forming this committee, we never really talked about what the structure of the committee would be like and how we're going to run our meetings. So I think that's the first task that we need to do. It's, well, first, everybody needs to kind of get to know each other and introduce ourselves. Probably need to elect a chair and a vice chair to run the meetings with. And we would probably take our existing advisory committee bylaws as a guide and see how they best fit this committee and make recommendations to council and bring that back to council to more formalize how this committee would operate. Probably, I know it's going to be difficult with this committee, but come to agreement on when we should meet, how often we should meet, and what the minimum meeting frequencies are, what the maximum meeting frequencies will be. So the way I view it is probably not going to meet more than, you know, once every 2 weeks, probably won't go more than a month without a meeting. So that's kind of the range that I'm thinking. As the project gets into various phases, we'll meet more often than less. Is that what we were looking for?
That's great stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. Absolutely. And then we had talked about potential as the committee gets more involved, looking at potential for subcommittees.
Correct.
As necessary strategically.
I see that as a vital resource that this committee could do is, though, you know, two and three members could form a subcommittee, research a subject, and then bring it back to the full committee to discuss. And that way, everybody learns everything about it, but, you know, not everybody needs to do all the heavy lifting. We can share that amongst us. And I think that's how we would be most effective.
Yeah, and then if you'll indulge me, one last item. I don't know if we want to. We do have the benefit of having the recent site and options analysis report that would probably be an excellent place for the committee to familiarize themselves with to prepare to help us as we get the options analysis back that we're planning on the CMC, the Men's Colony option, as well as the Highway 41,
correct,
Rancho Colina. As we're thinking September, that time range, we're going to be making some pretty key decisions about the future of the site, and that options report would be the foundation to that. And so you'd probably be looking at that.
Correct, and then
as well.
We'll be bringing back information throughout the summer also.
Yeah. And for any member of the public that's interested, that is available online.
Yes, it is.
Okay, good, good points. I think we're good. Thanks, Rob. We have one more follow-up then, I can see, David.
Yeah, I wanted to make a statement that, I'm glad he said that because I've been wondering kind of how the committee would work. What interests me is the subcommittees doing research. That's what I'll be good at.
Okay, thank you. Well, with that, folks, thanks again for all of your time and your interest in applying. Like I said earlier in this evening, we will be conducting the interviews tomorrow. We're very fortunate to have so many. I mean, it was a surprise to us all to get such a impressive, as I said earlier, group of applicants. And not only did we get what's here tonight, but we have six more to do tomorrow. So we'll get through that tomorrow night, and then we'll start the process of selecting everyone. So I just wanted to say thanks for taking the time to come out tonight, and we sure appreciate that. Any other closing remarks? George? Noah? Well, thanks. With that, we'll adjourn the meeting, and we'll be in contact with all of you. Thanks very much.